everyone, and welcome to today's podcast. It's December, and December is National Impaired Driving Awareness Month. It's also an important holiday season when friends and family gather in celebration. We wanted to talk about substance use in and around all of this and explore options and ways to traverse this exciting time, especially with our kids, so all are safe and can remain joyful. We're talking today with Rhonda Campbell, a senior victim services specialist with Mothers Against Drunk Driving, also known as MADD. Hi, Rhonda. Welcome.
Hi. Thank you.
We're glad you're here. And we usually start by asking all of our guests if they have children. And if so, what age are their kids? So we understand, or listeners understand, if you're a parent and where you are in that parenting cycle.
Absolutely. I have three children and two stepchildren, so a total of five. They're all adults now, ranging from their mid-20s to their 30s. And the blessing in that is that I have eight beautiful grandchildren also. And they range from 13 years old to 11 months. So parenting and grandparenting is a part of my everyday life.
That's awesome. So it's a great time of year. And it's also a time of year we want to be maybe mindful of some stuff. MADD has been out there helping us remember that impaired driving is a big problem. And can you tell us a little bit, just to start off, about MADD, its history, the work you're doing in our community?
It is, yeah.
Any of those things.
I'm in the Sacramento area, and MADD was actually founded in Fair Oaks, California, which is a suburb of Sacramento. So MADD started in 1980. One woman campaign by a lady whose daughter was killed by an impaired driver while she was walking home from church carnival. And at that time, there wasn't a lot of legislation or laws surrounding drunk driving. And the offender ended up doing very little time, and she was not happy about it. So she started her crusade right here in the Valley in 1980. And today we have offices across the United States.
So it sounds like there's educational work that you do and some advocacy work that you do. Tell us about both of those.
So my primary job is as an advocate here at MADD, but we all wear many hats because we have to. We're busy and there are a lot of facets to what we're trying to accomplish here. So in addition to my advocacy, we get out and we talk to students, we talk to parents, we talk to offenders. And we have programs geared at every level to educate, to inform, and just let people know that this is a real problem that has consequences, and here's what real consequences look like. We have very specific programs for age levels from elementary school up through college, and then a different program that we use to address offenders.
That's an interesting part of what MADD does. For me personally, I've always assumed the education piece. I didn't understand the advocacy piece so much, and I know that's policy-oriented, but your specific, or one of your specific roles, is as a victims services specialist. So tell us a little bit more about that role, and then tell us your story as well.
Sure. So in my role as a victim advocate, which is what, you know, the easy layman's term is I help people who've been impacted by impaired driving crashes, whether it be somebody's death or serious injury, whatever the case may be, they call MADD for help and they'll get connected to a local advocate because, as I said, we have offices across the United States. In my role as an advocate, I can take on many, many, many tasks for a family and step up beside them when the task is overwhelming for them. For example, shortly after a crash happens, one of the first things a family needs to do is show up in court and face the person who caused this tragedy in their life. And it is not easy. It's very difficult. And so for me to be able to sit alongside somebody who's dealing with that trauma and just have a hand on their back or talk them through the process, to me, is a gift. Aside from that, I have referrals for financial help, mental health help, housing. You never know. Some people lose their homes when drunk drivers crash through the front door. I can work with DAs. I have very good relationships with our local DAs I can pick up the phone and call and ask questions about things and relay that information to my victim in terms that they can understand given their situation, and just walk beside them through the whole process, because it is really challenging. So for me, my advocacy started when I was a teenager and I didn't know it. And that is because when I was 15, my 12-year-old sister, Irene, was killed by a drunk driver. The guy that killed my sister was a 4-time repeat offender. He did not have a valid driver's license. He was driving crazy. He was a .15, ran a stop sign and hit the car my little sister was riding in head on, killed the driver, which was my best friend's mother, and left my sister on the side of the road critically injured. My sister passed away the next day from her injury. She never did regain consciousness or wake up. But in 1980, when this happened, my sister was killed 256 days after MAD was founded. There weren't a lot of aids out there for people like my family, victim services. We got a few calls from MAD, but they hadn't developed to the organization that they are now. And one of the things that has stuck with me my whole life is my parents were never given the opportunity to speak to the prosecutor and show up in court and give an impact statement. And those are two things that I'm passionate about, and I make sure every one of my victims understands it's their right to do and take advantage of that, because it's so important moving forward that you've had that opportunity to speak up. We did not get that opportunity. So that's where my advocacy stems from.
It's so heartbreaking. You know, I can't even imagine. And this idea of getting to speak up as part of the, it sounds like part of the legal process, but also the grief process, is so critical. Did you, when you were 15 years old, obviously your life changed really dramatically. Did you start speaking out at some point in time when you were a younger person? I can't imagine. Did you find out about MAD in shortly after, or was it a later in your life?
So I knew of MAD. MAD had reached out to my family a few times and my parents had talked about it. But I was 15. I didn't really have the brain capacity at that age to put it all together and start speaking out or advocating. Right. But as I got older and I saw the trends, I was always connected to MAD. And I would try to help what I thought was help. I would call and say, hey, I'm going to volunteer. Let me know what you need. And during those years between 15 and becoming an adult, I was like, oh, sure, I'm a MAD supporter. I help MAD. I sat down one day and realized, you're not doing anything. I'm just talking about MAD. I need to get involved. And that's when I showed up at my local office and said, give me something to do. Anything. I will lick stamps. I will mail letters. I will do anything. I just want my foot in the door. And I was lucky enough to have a boss there who believed in me. And after a few months of volunteering, this position as victim services person came open and I tried really hard for it and I got lucky and they hired me. So I don't think anything happens by accident. I was meant to be in this spot and the timing just had to be right. And I think somebody watching over me made those choices for me when it was a good time to enter.
That's lovely. So tell me a little bit more about MAD and its role with law enforcement, because I think you've mentioned the judiciary system, the DA's office and prosecutors. And is there a connection with peace officers and CHP, which is California Highway Patrol out here, highway patrols in other states?
So we work very closely with law enforcement, CHP, and all of our local agencies as well. What we have learned along the process is working with law enforcement is really our first line of defense. There are so many ways that they can help us get involved when we need to. They're first responders. They know of a crash before anybody. I've developed relationships with law enforcement to the point where I've actually had an officer call me from a crash scene and say, this family's going to need you. I get the referrals. I get the information. So not only are they a great liaison to victims, but they're our first line of defense on the highways, getting drunk drivers off the road. And they very much support and promote our mission of ending impaired driving.
I mean, in some ways, it's a no-brainer that they're the first line of defense. And in other ways, I don't know that I've thought very deeply about that. And they're human beings, too, that are impacted by these experiences. And Do they understand generally how important their role is and how important this particular type of safety is and making our community safe? Is that a dumb question or I don't know.
I think they do understand it. No, I think it's a real question because I get where you're going. The difference between compassion and work. Mm-hmm. They do understand what they're doing is important work. And what our goal is to keep that fresh in their memory. And the way we do that is we get out and we go to briefings and we stand at DUI checkpoints next to officers. And while we're doing that, we're telling them our story or the story of somebody else who's been impacted by a drunk driver. And I always say to them, everyone that you take off the road saved a life. No question about it. You saved a life getting that person off the road tonight. And that's how I want them to think about it in the top of their head when they see somebody driving erratically. This person's going to kill someone. I've got to get them off the road.
You are doing something specific mm-hmm. in California with our highway patrol in December.
Yes, it's called To Get There campaign. Basically, it's a red ribbon campaign. CHP and a lot of local area law enforcement agencies will be carrying our MAD red ribbons on their patrol vehicles during the holiday season. And I think it's so good because not only does it show how they support us, but it's just a reminder to the community. Oh, yeah. And I think some people need that reminder sometimes. Look at this. There's a police car with a MAD ribbon. This is a force to be reckoned with. We have to do better as a society.
So the advocacy work that you're doing really does cover a lot of areas, and it's really expansive.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
So tell us your thoughts about the holidays and what should we be thinking? Our audience is typically parents, so as parents, as family, celebrations are happening. What do you think? What frame of mind should we all be in?
So, of course, we want everybody to enjoy their holiday and their family traditions and all of the things that make us happy this time of year. But on the other side of that, in my role at MAD, I'm going to see a spike in telephone calls because during the holiday season between December and January or end of November and January, we're going to see a significant spike in impaired driving crashes. And a lot of that relates directly back to what you just talked about, office parties, people celebrating at home and things like that. So as a parent, I think it's really important to have those transparent conversations with your kids and teach them by example, you don't have to have alcohol to have fun. That's a trap that I worry about. You know, people equate alcohol and fun, and it's just not necessary. So if we are talking to our kids and living the example and talking about designated drivers and all of the things that can protect you from being in an impaired driving crash, we're increasing their chances of having a happy, peaceful holiday season and not being impacted by something traumatic.
It's great insight. Are there any steps? Because it's probably safe to say that a lot of holiday celebrations are going to have alcohol. Are there any steps we can mm-hmm. take mm-hmm. knowing that that is probably going to be the case?
I mean, there's two sides to this. If you're a party giver, if you're the host, be a good host. Talk about sober driving. Watch out for your guests. Make sure they're safe to drive. And offer non-alcoholic choices at your party because a lot of people, you know, peer pressure doesn't just affect kids. Adults as well will say, how come you're not drinking? How come you're not having a drink? And having a mocktail in your hand will sometimes take that pressure away. And not only that, it's a safe choice for you to enjoy your evening, get back in the car and drive home. So as a host, we just encourage people to be a good host. Watch for your guests, provide non-alcoholic options. As a party goer, you almost have the same responsibility, in my opinion, watching out for your fellow party goers. If you see something that doesn't look safe, intervene. I mean, that's what we're supposed to do. And just make sure you're making good choices for yourself as well. I say there's always somebody at home waiting for you. You want to make sure we get there safely.
I like that. And thinking about the two roles at the party is really interesting, you know, and being a good host or being a good's probably the wrong word, but being a mindful host that this party mm-hmm. is an event that you're planning, but it ripples out into the community as well. And just thinking about ride sharing and being mindful about watching your guests and making sure everybody's okay. I don't think I've thought of that before.
People that have these corporate parties, which are big this time of year, they actually make pre-arranged rides with Lyft or Uber. They get a little discount, or they set up a hotel so nobody's going out that night. And then they've got these ride shares already lined up. Such an easy thing to do to avoid a very traumatic collision or crash or something else that could hurt someone.
When we were talking originally, and I just want to make sure we say this out loud. You were talking about what the holidays are like without your sister. And if you wanted to share anything you're comfortable sharing with us, I just think it's important for people to hear.
Sure. You know, after losing someone you love and a family member like we did, my sister, she was 12, she was a child. It changes your entire trajectory in life. Everything you do from that day forward is different and has different meaning. My sister was killed in August, and the first holiday we had was Thanksgiving. My parents couldn't even bear the idea of sitting at a table and having a Thanksgiving meal with that empty chair. We left town. We did not even celebrate. Christmas was always a big deal for us. It still is, but my sister and I always had these traditions, you know, the baking, the hot cocoa, the Christmas trees, the presents Christmas morning, and it's gone. Christmas morning for me and my parents now is visiting a cemetery. And I think I said this to you before, nobody should have to stand in wet grass and look at the name of somebody they love on a piece of marble because of a choice that someone else made. And that's our reality. We do that several times a year, not just Christmas.
That idea that it never goes away, it's really daunting. And I know you had also said to me or had some thoughts about the perpetrator and the perpetrator's families. And can you share those thoughts with us too?
Absolutely. So as a victim, I never really thought much about offenders. They didn't cross my mind. I didn't give them a second thought. I just didn't have the bandwidth to care, for lack of a better word. And to some degree, I have to say that I'm still there. But as an advocate and spending time in court with families who've lost loved ones, I've seen a really interesting other side in that. I'll give you an example. I stood in a courtroom with a family who lost a child to a drug impaired driver. And he was an elderly man. And eventually he was sentenced to what will be a life sentence for him, given his age. And I'm with the family who I'm trying to support, and it's very emotional and all that. But when I look across the courtroom, I see that man's grown children, his grandchildren, and they are broken. And it just really came full circle for me that, yeah, I mean, my work is important with my victims, and that's my role. But a drunk driving crash that kills somebody affects so many more than just the person that was injured or killed. And it's so irresponsible to put that on your own family to live with the rest of their life, again, for a choice that you made.
These are really difficult things to talk about, but it seems like if we will talk about them and we can be mindful of even some simple things, that it has a profound effect. I really appreciate your sharing that story to see both sides. What else does MAD want parents to think about or know?
So we have an entire program geared towards teaching parents how to talk to their kids. It's called Power of Parents. And I shouldn't use the word teaching, honestly. It's coaching. And the whole key is talk to your kids. Have conversations with them. Set up safe calls, things that might be important in a situation that they're uncomfortable in. If we're not talking to our children, somebody else is. And we don't want that to happen. We need to set up our own parameters, give them safe tips, put those ride share buttons on their phones, give them that safe ride home, and make sure they know if there's a situation where they're uncomfortable, and they don't feel safe, they've got to have a way home. Code word, call mom. I'll come get you no matter what. Just anything to help them understand you don't have to do this. You have alternatives. You can come home. You can be safe.
I think there's also even this idea of empowering younger kids. You tell me a story about a young child who's at a friend's house and they're all playing and the parents are having a glass of wine. And then the parents decide, okay, let's all jump in the car and go get pizza. What is a child who's not of driving age and or just younger and still, you know, feeling that they are the elders and the parents, what does that child do?
Unfortunately, the studies tell us that child gets in the car. And so that's why we're really big on talking to your kids early. And studies and research have shown that children in the United States of America will have their first thoughts about experimenting with alcohol at the age of 9. So a lot of people say, oh, they're too young, I can't teach them yet. That's absolutely not true. They're not. We need to be talking to them at that age moving forward, because as they develop, so do the circumstances they may find themselves in. And something as simple as I'm playing video games with my buddy and his dad's been drinking and wants to take us for a hamburger. It's easy. It's a phone call to mom. I don't feel good. Can you come get me? I don't really feel good. Just anything to get out of that situation and not be uncomfortable.
I like that. We obviously at Talk to Hear You are huge believers in the talk as early as you can, as often as you can. Are there any specific conversation starters that you would recommend? Or is it just recognizing that drinking is out there and a part of life and these are the ways to protect yourself?
There are so many natural conversation starters around us every single day. I mean, you watch the news, there's going to be a conversation starter on there. I think kids that have good relationships with their parents and open conversation, they see something at school or they hear about something. It's the opportunity for you to sit them down and say, okay, these are the things I want you to know. And these are the things that I need you to know to be safe. We do have an entire program aimed at students as well. And part of that is talk to your parents. They want you to, they want to help you. And so we're hoping the two programs can work together and open that line of communication between kids and their parents so that they don't have that awkward silence, which is what I'm going to call it, awkward silence through their teen years, not teaching them what possibly could happen by one bad choice.
You had also talked about making DUI personal. Can you tell us more about that?
Absolutely. So, you know, we're human. And when you watch the news at night and you see, for example, a headline that says teenager killed in DUI crash, of course we feel that compassion and that sadness. But what happens next? The weather comes on, we go grab a soda pop out of the fridge, we move on with our life. On the other side of that, which is where I'm working, you don't see the utter devastation. A family that has to clean out a bedroom and pack away stuff for somebody that will never come home. A breadwinner who's killed in a crash who can't provide for the family anymore and they've lost their home. These are all real things that have happened to victims I've worked with. I just got an email yesterday from a lady who was hit by a drunk driver. She's disabled. She's asking me to help her find a Thanksgiving meal for her children. These things last for years. The impacts on families are deep and devastating. And we need to make better choices so that that is not happening anymore. I don't like having to find Thanksgiving food for a family because a drunk driver hit them. It's heartbreaking. Or worse, have a funeral on a holiday because it's happening. You know, Thanksgiving and people are burying their children. Christmas, they're burying their family. That's what your holiday will be for the rest of your life, no matter what. And so we need to think about it that way and see what the other side of the impact is, not just the criminal side that the offender's dealing with. These families are dealing with real and severe trauma and consequences.
It's so daunting. It's really hard to like know what to do with this information. I mean, I'm listening to you say this and I'm thinking this is supposed to be a holiday episode, right? And how Yeah. You know, it doesn't get to be a holiday ever again. And I think you said, because of something that's 100% preventable. And really,
absolutely,
all of us taking this as seriously as we possibly can, so that we don't have to internalize how devastating this is for families, that we can end this situation.
Yes. It is 100% preventable 100% of the time, which if we had those odds on anything else in life, wouldn't that be great? Yeah. And it all comes down to decision-making and planning. So easy. Stuff we do every single day with other aspects of our life. It's the same thing. Plan ahead, think it through, make the right choice, get home safe.
And work together. Be in conversation with your families about this. Prioritize it. Oh, Rhonda, thank you so much.
You're welcome.
I really appreciate your spending time with us and sharing some really difficult things to talk about. Anything else you would say before we sign off?
Yeah, the last thing I would say is, if you are in a situation where you want to start these conversations with your children or you need resources, our website is madmadd.org, and there's links to everything you could possibly want to read, see, or learn about MAD there. And you can get connected with an advocate if you need that. So I would encourage people to visit our website and check out the work we're doing.
It's a perfect way to end. Thank you so much. And we look forward to speaking with you again in the future.
Thank you. I appreciate it.
We want to remind listeners that Talk They Hear You materials, including this podcast, can be found at the Talk They Hear You website. That's talktheyhearyou.samhsa.gov. All spelled out, Talk They Hear You, no spaces, .samhsa, which is SAMHSA.gov. Please share this site and this podcast with your friends. The more we can be in conversation with each other, the better for everyone, especially our kids. Also, we would like to hear from you. Would you like to be on our show? Do you have any stories to share or tips and techniques that have worked or not for you in the past as a parent? Do you have any questions for us or feedback on topics or improvements of any kind? We know your input will help us design the most useful interviews possible. Please contact us at whatparentsaresaying@gmail.com for any of this. Again, all spelled out, whatparentsaresaying@gmail.com. This podcast is brought to you by the Substance Abuse and Mental Health Services Administration. Talk They Hear You is a national prevention campaign that aims to help parents and caregivers talk with their kids about the dangers and risks of underage drinking and other drug use. As a reminder, the views expressed here are not necessarily those of SAMHSA or the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services. Thank you all for joining us, and we'll see you next time.